Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm so glad you've joined us. The Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice this week released the results of a 14-month investigation into the patterns and practices of the Baltimore Police Department. The investigation was announced last May by U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. It's separate from the Justice Department's investigation into the death of Freddie Gray, who died after sustaining a fatal injury in the custody of Baltimore police. Yesterday, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, Police Commissioner Kevin Davis, and Vanita Gupta, the head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division, spoke to the press at City Hall about the report. Here's part of what Vanita Gupta said.
Our guide to policing amidst these realities must be the Constitution and federal anti-discrimination law. Today, the Department of Justice announces the outcome of our investigation and issues a 163-page report detailing our findings. We conclude that there is reasonable cause to believe that BPD engages in a pattern or practice of conduct that violates the Constitution and federal anti-discrimination law. BPD engages in a pattern or practice of making unconstitutional stops, searches, and arrests, using enforcement strategies that produce severe and unjustified disparities in the rates of stops, searches, and arrests of African Americans, using excessive force, and retaliating against people engaging in constitutionally protected expression. These violations have deeply eroded the mutual trust between BPD and the community it serves, trust that is essential to effective policing as well as to officer and public safety.
That was Vanita Gupta, the head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division. She said the Justice Department reviewed hundreds of thousands of pages of documents covering 2010 until this year. Some of the report's findings: that 44% of the Baltimore Police Department stops were made in two predominantly African-American parts of the city. The Justice Department found that hundreds of individuals, nearly all of them African-American, were stopped at least 10 times. Seven African-American men were stopped on more than 30 separate occasions. Fewer than 4% of pedestrian stops resulted in a citation or an arrest, the report found. Another finding of the nearly 3,000 incidents in which use of force was noted, only 10 allegations of excessive force were lodged internally by fellow officers. Of these 10 incidents, only one use of force was found to be excessive. Another finding: that supervisors at central booking and local prosecutors rejected more than 11,000 charges made by Baltimore Police Department officers because they lacked probable cause or otherwise did not merit prosecution. And another finding: that African Americans accounted for 82% of all vehicle stops, while they account for only 60% of the driving age population in the city. Joining us by phone to discuss this is Lieutenant Roy Alston of the Dallas Police Department. Lieutenant Alston is a patrol watch commander responsible for coordinating the efforts of officers in Southern Dallas. He has studied police ethics, and he's worked with the Dallas Force to introduce and train officers in evidence-based policing procedures. Roy Alston was a member of the Justice Department's Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services. Its acronym is COPS. The team that studied Ferguson, Missouri's police response to protests following the shooting death of Michael Brown. Welcome back to Midday, Roy. Roy, are you with us? I don't know whether Okay. I hope that we'll be able to get Roy Alston with us. But here with me in the studio is Kwame Rose, who's an activist, an artist, and a producer with the Real News Network. Welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm very glad you're with us. So what struck you about this report? What do you think people should most focus on?
Well, you know, nothing really struck me about this report, right? This report is nothing different than what people have been saying long before Freddie Gray was killed. This is just confirmation and on paper validating the claims that black people in Baltimore City have been crying out for years, and that is Baltimore police has engaged in zero tolerance policing. They have locked up unjustly thousands, hundreds of thousands, and even if not millions of black individuals in this city long before 2010, where this report starts.
I'd like to take a listen to some of what Commissioner Kevin Davis said yesterday.
It is critically important for me to say in my opening remarks that this report is not an indictment on every man and woman that has the privilege of wearing this uniform, this patch, and this badge. This report is, however, an indictment of those bad behaviors by a relatively small number of police officers over many, many years. There are officers right now that are just as offended as we are to see the details that are laid out in this report. Why? Because they wear this uniform proudly and they serve the citizens of Baltimore honorably each and every day. We know that our citizens are outraged at some of the details included in this report, and they should be. Citizens can't be expected to respect an agency if the trust of that agency is breached. There are several instances in this report in which that fragile trust has been breached. And some of the more egregious acts described in the report, action has been taken, and those police officers have been removed and no longer work for the Baltimore Police Department.
That was Kevin Davis, police commissioner, at yesterday's press conference about the Department of Justice report. And Roy Alston is with us now. I think maybe Roy was with us before, and I just couldn't hear him. Roy, welcome to Midday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
This report has hit Baltimore kind of like a ton of bricks, even though, as Kwame Rose said, many people aren't surprised by its findings. What should a community facing this kind of scrutiny from the Justice Department, what is a useful way to receive this information?
Well, the best way to receive the information is to be open and honest about the reality of this situation. You know, I listened to Commissioner Bates talk, and he said, well, this report is not an indictment against all the police officers there, and it most certainly is not. But I think he understates the fact that this behavior has been going on for generations. There are more bad police officers in their ranks than they want to admit. Unfortunately, for the last 25 or 30 years, most police leaders will tell you that it's just a few bad apples. When in actuality, my research, my dissertation research, and all the research that I've seen indicates that the barrel itself could potentially be rotten. And so to say that, you know, and I get it, I'm a practicing police officer. Are all bad police officers bad? No, they're not. But the breadth, the depth, and the detail of this report signals to me that there may be more bad police officers than the commissioner is willing to admit. So there has to be some honesty in regards to the longevity of how long this situation has been going on and the actual depth of the corruption and this bad policing behavior that permeates the organization.
How do you, it's a little bit like changing the tire while the car's still going down the road. I mean, this is a police department that needs to be policing the city while all this scrutiny is taking place. So how do you do that without, I don't know, I mean, I'm not suggesting any collective action that Baltimore police should take, but it's got to hit every member of the force to hear about this and to hear what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a gut check for an organization that, and to the young man's point, this is not behavior that's unfamiliar to the communities of color. This has been going on for generations. So this is a gut check. So the Baltimore Police Department now has to decide, are we going to be a constitutional police department and do the tough work of transformation, or are we going to diminish the report, say it's not as bad as people think it is, and try to wait until the dust settles? And oh, by the way, 10 years from now, we'll be talking about the same exact thing. So it's gut check time for this department. It's time for the good police officers to start to stand up and call this behavior out. It's time for the organization to put systems and processes in place that eliminate the retaliation against police officers shining a bright light on this behavior. And it's time to hold first-line supervisors accountable for the behavior of their officers. You know, as a practicing police officer, I was literally appalled at some of the incidents of where first-line supervisors facilitated this bad policing behavior. And I have to be honest, it's just flat unacceptable. So they find themselves in a very interesting position to have to do the tough work of transformation And it's not going to be easy. What the exact strategy they use, I'm not familiar with their policies, procedures, processes, and internal operations. But it's gut check time for the Baltimore Police Department, and I think they're going to have it's going to be very tough for them to do.
That is Lieutenant Roy Alston of the Dallas Police Department here on Midday on WYPR. Lieutenant Alston was involved in one of the Department of Justice's investigations into the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department. I'm Sheila Cass. This is Midday on WYPR. And here with me in the studio is Kwame Rose, activist and a producer for the Real News Network. And you're welcome to join this conversation. We're looking forward to hearing what you think about this Justice Department report, what you think the city of Baltimore needs to do next. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Kwame Rose, a gut check for the police department. How is this being heard in the community? How is it being received?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's just confirmation of what community members have been saying long before Freddie Gray died. And I will disagree with Roy that Baltimore City has to now begin a transformation of its police department. That won't happen. That can't happen because historically, this report has proven Baltimore City Police operates in racial bias, white supremacist and anti-black policing techniques that revert back to slavery times. I was speaking with former Baltimore City Police Commissioner Anthony Batts, who was commissioner for 3 years during this report, during the evidence that this report comes from. And this is what he said. He said, the DOJ report is right on the button. I haven't seen such a department in this shape in my career. I told the media the racism in the city is like what it was in the 1950s. I was told that I was the problem. I didn't like Baltimore. The FOP is going to be the biggest problem for change in the city. He also said, there are so many problems in the city, including the only black-on-black crime that takes place in Baltimore is in the government. He said that there are some good people there, but I fired 75 cops in 2 years trying to cut out the cancers in the department. And he also suggests that Baltimore City policing, its current state, has to be disbanded. We've seen this happen after the DOJ came into the community before in Camden, New Jersey, where after their report, they recommended dismantling the police department and building a new police department. That's what has to take place here in Baltimore City. And that's what the community will feel as though their voices have been heard. That's when we finally will feel as though our voices have been heard.
That is a huge idea you just put on the table. We need to take a break here. I want to talk about that more, what dismantling a police department would look and feel like. And I'm also curious about what our listeners think about whether that is what the next step needs to be. We have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll discuss this more. You can join the conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email. Midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the 163-page report issued by the U.S. Department of Justice this week. It details years of unconstitutional policing by police officers in Baltimore. The report points to discriminatory and illegal policing methods, as well as inaccurate training, inadequate staffing and resources, a lack of accountability for officers after citizens file complaints. Here is another clip from yesterday's press conference. Vinita Gupta, head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, describes the impact of the lost confidence in the Baltimore City Police Department.
We found incident reports that documented how witnesses wouldn't share basic information with officers. We read several reports where the person who had originally called the police or needed assistance refused to cooperate after becoming upset by the police response. And when residents don't trust the police, the distrust makes it harder for officers to prevent and solve crimes. Proactive policing does not have to lead to these consequences. When the community trusts the police, residents work with law enforcement to ensure public safety.
Listeners, you are welcome to join this conversation. Tell us what you think the Baltimore Police Department, what steps it should take next, what the city should do. Tell us what you think of Kwame Rose's idea that the police department in Baltimore needs to be dismantled. You can join the conversation by calling us at 410-662-8780 or sending an email to midday@wypr.org. Roy Alston, let me ask what you thought about Kwame Rose's comment.
Well, I have a considerable amount of respect for his comment. I mean, I think everything at this point for the Baltimore Police Department, I think every option should be looked at honestly and with significant detail. But I will say this: agencies that have gone through and have really embraced the Department of Justice consent decree process, technical assistance, collaborative reform, have truly emerged to be significantly better police departments. So we look to the Los Angeles Police Department. They had some significantly dark days in the 90s coming out of some very significant events. They went through their consent decree, and it's not arguable that they are, one can say very well, significantly, they are a much better police department. Agencies who have actually embraced the process, gone through the process, have come out better on the other side. And so it's a process. The process works. It's just a matter of whether they're going to embrace it or not. And it's all about the resistance within the organization. If there's a lot of resistance in the organization to the process, it's going to be a lot longer, and it might not have the effect that the community absolutely wants. So I understand where he's coming from. There has been examples where police departments have been dismantled. I wouldn't put Camden, New Jersey, in the same scope as Baltimore Police Department. I mean, it was a much smaller department. There were other factors that led to the dismantling of that police department and the reconstitution of that police department that might not be in favor. The same dynamics might not be in favor inside of the Baltimore Police Department.
Let's talk to Steve, who has called us from Baltimore. Steve, welcome to Midday.
Hi, Sheila. How are you doing?
Just great. How are you?
Good, thanks. First, I want to say, Kwame, I'm a huge fan of yours and your activism. I love what you do. I'm glad that you're part of this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you,
Big question brother. I've read a lot of the report, and obviously I'm disgusted by some of the things that I've seen with individual interactions between officers and some of the civilians. But the real thing that stuck out to me was the way that officers who try to report misconduct get treated by their superior officers. And I'm wondering what your guests think about what we can do to foster this culture where officers are able to report misconduct and really police the police without facing the fear of retaliation. Thank you.
Steve, I appreciate the question. Roy Alston, do you want to address that?
Well, absolutely. So the research informs us that officers who are aware of this type of behavior don't report this behavior because they are in fear of being retaliated against. And unfortunately, what we find is first-line supervisors who have benefited from a corrupt system, lieutenants who have benefited from a corrupt system, and people who even higher in the organization who have benefited from a corrupt system who don't want to change the system and then leave these individuals outside complaining about this behavior. So what we have to do is we have to put into place a mechanism in which officers can actually report this type of behavior and that the behavior is followed up on without outside of the organization. So this is where the civilian oversight has to be strengthened considerably, because there are good officers in the Baltimore Police Department. There are good officers today who are embarrassed by this report, who want to help the Baltimore Police Department move forward. But there are obstacles in their way from preventing them from doing that. I mean, one of the inside the report, it spoke to the fact that a guy had a decapitated rat on his car. It goes to show the level of the culture of corruption of a culture inside an organization that literally has to be dismantled. And that's a leadership issue. It is a leadership issue. When you have leaders who have benefited from a corrupt system, they're not going to change that system. So you have to start putting people in place. You have to take people out of leadership positions who don't want to change the system, put people in position who are willing to change the system, and go through the tough transformation that's going to take to allow that to happen. But we have to put things in place for good officers to thrive in the organization. And that, unfortunately, everything that I read in the report says there's nothing in place for good officers to thrive.
Of course, I think it's important to point out for this conversation that the current commissioner, Kevin Davis, was in place for only a small part of the time that the Justice Department was reviewing. And Vinita Gupta expressed approval of the steps, some of the small steps that Davis already has taken. Kwame Rose, how do you feel about that? I mean, the other pertinent point, I think, about Commissioner Davis is that he went through a process like this when he was fairly high in command, not chief, in Prince George's County. Does that give you any reason to think this could work?
No, you know, I think it's very problematic to use this narrative that there are only some bad cops, right? When we literally have a report that suggests that the entire department engaged in these biased, racist, white supremacist, and anti-black tactics. I think it's more of a reflection on the need and the necessariness to dismantle Baltimore policing as it is, the department as it is, and replace it with a completely new commissioner, a completely new department, with completely new tactics and completely new protocol. And it's also a reflection on Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake, right? From this small sample study from 2010 to 2015, it all occurred under her watch. And she's advocated continuously that spending more money on policing will solve the problem and not spending more money on communities. So I think that, no, Kevin Davis may not be accountable for what happened before he joined Baltimore's police department. But Kevin Davis, Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake, and every Baltimore City police officer has to be held accountable for re-entrenching this cycle of white supremacy that the Baltimore City Police Department has engaged in for decades.
So when you read the piece in the Baltimore Sun quoting State Senator Catherine Pugh, the winner of the primary for mayor, the likely next mayor of Baltimore, saying that she wants Kevin Davis to see this process through.
Mm-hmm.
And that struck you as the wrong way to go.
You know, full discretion, I'm a big supporter of Catherine Pugh. I have a personal relationship with Senator Pugh. But I do disagree with her on this issue. I do think that the only way to solve this issue, the only way to create community policing, is to dismantle Baltimore City Police Department as it currently is. I think that State Senator Catherine Pugh is wrong on this issue, right? Because you're not going to reestablish trust by just implementing officer friendly once again into the community. The only way you reestablish trust, like black people in Baltimore City will never trust the police department as it is in this current state. It'll take decades. It'll take centuries for that trust to be regained. The only way you can establish new trust is if you bring in something new, which hasn't harmed the ability to trust, which hasn't harmed the ability for average citizens to trust law enforcement.
Roy Alston, you want to jump in?
Well, I love Kwame's passion. I'm glad that he's on the forefront of this because this is important dialogue. But I'm here to tell you, the transformation does work, and it can work if Commissioner Batts is the current commissioner is going to be the person that goes forward.
Kevin Davis.
He's going to be the one that goes forward. The current commissioner is going to be the one that goes forward. We have to give him. They've got to put the infrastructure around him and give him the power to really change the organization. And I'm going to say another thing I think is very important because it mentioned the Fraternal Order of Police, the association that covers the officers there. There's significant evidence that, you know, associations spend an awful lot of time and money protecting bad police officers. And it's these bad police officers that get this coding that the entire organization is bad. Now, I understand his perspective about the history because history is very important when you talk about the relationship with the police. But as a practicing police officer, I'm here to tell you that transformation does work. And if they embrace all of the tools that the Department of Justice makes available to them and they're serious about change, and when I'm talking about serious about change, I'm talking about removing people who are obstacles to change from positions of leadership in the organization and doing things that are concrete evidence to the community that we mean business about transforming this organization. And it works, but it takes time.
Let me pull Lorenzo into this conversation. Lorenzo is calling us from Baltimore, and I think his point is exactly relevant to what you're saying, Roy Alston. Lorenzo, welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much. First of all, I think that Kwame is like right on when he's talking about white supremacists. But I also think that Mr. Austin, and I apologize for calling you Mr. I forgot what your rank was, so I apologize.
Lieutenant.
But, okay, Commissioner. So, but I think that he's making some very good points as to how to change the police department. But if you go back to what Kwame's saying about the white supremacist aspect of this situation, I think you got no choice but to do a Kwame stand. But anyway, I had a couple of questions. First of all, about the police union, and I want to preface my remarks by saying I am pro-union all the way. But as I look at this situation that happened in Baltimore, and I've lived in several states and several cities, but when I see it in Baltimore, I always seem to see the police union opposite the people of Baltimore and opposite the city officials. I'd like to find out or hear from you all what you think the police union's role is in these issues, whether it be positive or negative. My second question is Kwame, you're advocating, just tearing the police department up and starting over, which I kind of agree with you. But I mean, have you been in touch or communicated with city officials or made any kind of policies about what you do then? I mean, are you going to recruit people from the neighborhood to be police departments? Are you going to let the state take over? What are you going to do? I mean, because, we need the police.
Lorenzo, I appreciate both those questions. Kwame, I'm going to let you ponder that one that was thrown to you and ask Lieutenant Alston about, you already made some comments about a police union, but what would you suggest? Lorenzo said he's for workers being represented by a union. So presumably in whatever the new form regime, whatever the police department in Baltimore is going forward, there's likely to be a police union.
Right. And I'm not saying there should not be any police unions. What I'm saying is very clearly is police unions must stop protecting bad police officers. Police unions across the United States spend millions of dollars protecting the few very bad police officers that are making the rest of us look bad. So they're almost complicit in this behavior because they allow, what they're telling police officers is, you go out there and you do things that are unfair, unlawful, against policy, against procedure, and because you're a member of ours, we're going to protect you. Because they're focused on protecting their membership and not focused on protecting the profession, which is much more important than any one individual. And I think that's very important. So we have to have honest conversations. Now, I'm not saying every single lodge, every single association has that issue, but to Kwame's point, there is this, to the caller's point, there always seems that the associations, whoever their mouthpiece is opposite of what the community thinks and what's happening, because their goal is to protect their membership. Their goal is not to protect the community, when they should be focused on protecting the profession and not the individual. There is no one person in public policing today that's more important than the profession itself. And oh, by the way, research tells us there are individuals out there who don't have the temperament to be a police officer in the 21st century. They don't. They don't have the right temperament. They don't have the right training. They don't have the right disposition for the job. I mean, officers will tell you, well, I was in fear for my life. Well, that's the equivalent of a doctor saying, or a surgeon saying, I'm afraid of blood. Well, baby, this is not the right job for you, and we should not be protecting those officers. That's my point.
Okay, thank you for that. And Kwame, yes.
What I'll say is, we can't use this word transformation anymore because it's been used. Every new police chief we get, they say, well, we're going to reform, we're going to transform, and we're going to build a better community policing. It just won't happen, and here's why. The FOP in Baltimore City, FOP Lodge 3, is probably the most racist organization that doesn't reflect the interests of its black officers and doesn't reflect the interests of the majority of the population in Baltimore City. We saw the unsympathetic response to the protesters who protested against the brutality that happened to Freddie Gray. And not only that, but the FOP has paid off lawmakers in Baltimore City, where they've donated to nearly every elected official's campaign, including the Mosbys, Nick Mosby and Marilyn Mosby. And so we can't be scared, right? We can't be scared of this radical idea to dismantle an institution that doesn't serve the interest of the people.
Hold on a minute. Let me let Vernon talk to you about this. Vernon is calling us from Hartford. Vernon, welcome to Midday.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Did I turn my phone off or turn it down?
Yeah, you should turn you should turn your phone down.
All right, hold on.
And join us, Vernon.
All right, go ahead. Yeah, I just had a question. I'd like to know, what does he propose to replace the police department? If you want to dismantle the police department, what are you going to go around the neighborhood and let them pick people to be the officers? The cousins of all the drug dealers and everything. Are you from those neighborhoods? I grew up in the 900 block of 4th Street in Southeast Baltimore, right at Ashland Avenue. I know what those neighborhoods are like. I'm a white person. I'm 67 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an advocate of the Baltimore City Police Department. Believe me, because I've had my face flattened. I had to have plastic surgery twice on my nose just so I had a nose left.
Mm-hmm.
So believe me, I got beat in the face with a lead pipe inside a flashlight. But you can't deter crime without a police department. You can't blame it on the police department. Are you going to get all the neighborhoods to go around and police their own neighborhoods and stop all the crime? The people getting shot in the head every day on the sidewalks in Baltimore City? Who's going to do that?
Well, Vernon,
the roads don't do it.
Vernon, I'd say you can't have police if you don't have crime. So I say there is not a, it's not a radical idea to think that communities can police themselves, right? It's not a radical idea. So I'm not saying hire the cousins of these drug dealers. I'm saying go into the communities and hire the drug dealers. People don't sell drugs because they want to. People sell drugs because they need to be able to afford to be able to live in the city, right? And there's no reason, right? If you go around drug dealers, they probably some of the most safest neighborhoods inside of their own collective groups. So what I'm saying is that it's not a radical idea, that it can be done. All it takes is that individuals such as yourselves to get away from this idea and this notion that we need policing in this current state, which operates in anti-blackness, white supremacy, and not in the interest of the majority of the population in Baltimore. And we start investing in community-based policing, which starts by hiring from the community. But you can't hire from a community if no one from the community wants to work in an organization or a department such as Baltimore Police, which obviously has practices that target the community.
So let me make sure I've got this straight. You're not saying dismantle the current police department and set up another one.
No, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I thought you were just saying neighborhoods can police themselves.
I'm not saying we don't need police.
Okay.
I'm saying we don't need Baltimore City Police Department as it is. I'm saying dismantle Baltimore City Police Department as it is in this current state in which everything that the DOJ reported upon. Instead, build a new police department that centers around community policing, community engagement, community hiring. And that way, you not only do you solve crime, but you also provide jobs for the drug dealers, the thugs and the criminals who most of them are technically unemployed. So you not only solve the local hiring aspect, but you also solve the community engagement because you have actual community members inside of police uniforms.
We need to take another break here, and I'm really interested in what our listeners think about the idea of hiring the former drug dealers, others who have been on the wrong side of the law to enforce the law. You can be part of this conversation. You can tell us anything else you want to say about the Justice Department's report on Baltimore police. You can phone us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the Justice Department's scathing report on the Baltimore Police Department. Our guests are Lieutenant Roy Alston, a patrol watch commander with the Dallas Police Department. Lieutenant Alston worked on the Justice Department's review of how police in Ferguson, Missouri, handled the mass protests that followed the police-involved death of Michael Brown. Here with me in the studio is Kwame Rose, a Baltimore activist, an artist, and a journalist, a producer with the Real News Network. One of the themes of the Justice Department's report about the Baltimore police was that what's going on today, so many of its criticisms have their roots in what they call zero tolerance policing that began in the late 90s, or at least intensified in the 90s. And someone who is associated with that and has defended that approach to policing is former Governor Martin O'Malley. Martin O'Malley joins us by phone now. Welcome back to Midday.
Hey, Sheila. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could join us. So what do you think is missing from this Department of the Department of Justice report?
Well, the First of all, there's I think all of us as Americans have to acknowledge that the roots of racial injustice and policing, law enforcement, and criminal justice go back many, many centuries. And we'd be foolish not to acknowledge that. We should also have to acknowledge that Sandra Bland should not have died. Freddie Gray should not have died. And yet, in our city last year, or rather just last week, there were seven victims of homicides whose names none of us know, as Baltimore, as black homicides skyrocket and go up again in our city. So the Department of Justice report looked at the years from 2010 forward. I believe that one of the untold stories that the numbers would have shown had they gone further back is that indeed in the late 90s, when we started closing down the open-air drug markets that victimized almost entirely African-American neighborhoods in our city, we also took a number of other actions, including to improve the policing of our own police force, civilian review staffed with its own detectives, conducting 100 reverse integrity stings every single year, paying our police officers, and especially their experienced supervisors, at a higher pay so that we could retain experienced supervisors on the street, increasing the size of the Internal Affairs Division. These were all things that we did in order to deliver on the promise of not only protecting our neighbors in our poorest neighborhoods who had been victimized for decades by the violence of open-air drug markets, but it was also a promise that was made to improve how we police our police. We also greatly increased the affirmative recruitment of African-American and Latino officers, something that prior to that time had not been done. And we reported very openly and transparently on a regular basis the excessive force and discourtesy complaints and police-involved shootings. We reduced to 3 of the 4 lowest years in modern Baltimore history fatal police shootings in our city. And this is constant work that must be tended to, and we should learn from the things that worked and do more of them. We should learn from things that didn't work and stop doing them.
Are you asserting, Governor O'Malley, that if your approach to policing had been continued, the Justice Department would not have found the problems that it found between 2010 and 2016?
What I'm saying is that there are certain practices related to policing the police that fell by the wayside in the years after our administration left in 2006, 2007. And it's a shame because from 2000 to 2009, no city achieved a bigger reduction in crime
and I guess
than
what
Baltimore did.
What I'm trying to understand,
you might recall, Sheila, that people in those neighborhoods, our poorest neighborhoods in our city, had the opportunity in various.
Governor, can I stop you right there? Can I stop you right there?
Kwame, let him finish his point.
Well, I don't want him to misconstrue listeners with a political pre-written statement.
But let him finish his point, please.
No, Governor O'Malley. I think I've finished my point. I mean, what I'm saying is that there are many things that we did in order to reduce violent crime in our city. One of them had to do with closing down open-air drug markets that had been plagued.
And locking up millions of black individuals in Baltimore City,
right?
Another
one had to do with doubling drug treatment in our city. Yeah. Others had to do with open sharing of data and risk assessment tools that allowed us to better figure out who the people were that were actually pulling the triggers.
And illegally,
there.
And illegally,
we need to do more of these things.
Illegally locking up millions of black people, right? You made
millions.
No,
illegal arrests that happened under Martin O'Malley's administration and his watch. So the only thing from this report that you can tell, right, is if the DOJ would have went back far enough, Martin O'Malley, there would be enough evidence to say that Martin O'Malley should be in jail and should be federally indicted for false house arrest for initiating this zero tolerance policy, right? This report was started, right? These problems in Baltimore City policing, when you talk about zero tolerance policing, when you talk about falsifying arrests, when you talk about just locking up black people and stopping black people for no reason, it started under Martin O'Malley's watch when he wanted to build a new school, a new youth juvenile prison instead of building new schools. It didn't start because you attacked crime. It started because you attacked black people, poor black people in this city. You didn't do anything to prevent crime.
Well, Mr. Rose, if that were true, why is it then?
If that wasn't true, you'd be president.
88% of the vote and received my largest margins when running for governor from the poorest African American neighborhoods in our city. I think you are
black
putting
people's
me in a box,
you let him
sir, that is not deserved and is countered by the numbers we achieved in reducing black lives lost in our city due to violent crime.
You haven't
and
reduced
I think
those numbers.
A little, and none of these things. None of these things. I mean, during our time, actually, we had Eric Holder come to Baltimore and help us with 200 additional police officers on our street. And at the time, praised the very proactive.
That's what I want you to understand, Mr. O'Malley. Mr. O'Malley, what I want you to understand is that more police doesn't decrease crime. More investments into these communities do. When you over police, you create more crime.
2,500 does not improve crime either. I think we should learn from the things that actually work and do more of them.
And
some of them
this is what I'll say. This is what I'll say. Nothing under your administration worked.
And actually, before my time, before my time, there were actually arrests that happened that were also thrown out in court. But never, ever was there ever an order to arrest millions of black people for anything we can, wherever we can. That's a caricature. That's a falsehood that has never been worn out.
That's exactly what the DOJ
too little discussion about black victims in the course of these conversations and not enough discussion about the things that actually work.
So this is
to
where
improve accountability, responsibility, and discipline within our police force.
This is where I'll say you're wrong, right? You started this conversation by saying Sandra Bland should not have been killed, Freddie Gray should not have been killed, but neither should have these black-on-black homicide victims have been killed, right? That's wrong, right? What you're doing right now is trying to justify the killing of black people by a state-based organization as opposed to the killing of individuals by another citizen, right? Who, if your administration would have implemented policies with community investment, education, maybe if you would have done something about the lead poisoning that happened in Baltimore City schools under your administration, Corinne Gaines wouldn't have had a sea level of lead in her body, right? That halted her brain development. So, let me finish.
You let him finish.
City public schools than any governor before me ever had.
And that's
so
BS.
Go look at the facts, man.
No, I think what you don't
I'm
do
not
is
making
look at
this
the facts.
Up. I don't want to get in the way of your myth, but I mean the facts are facts. We're all entitled to our own opinions. We're not entitled to our own facts. And the fact of the matter is now that more young black people are being killed on our streets than before.
Because of your practices. And it's the fallacy.
Lieutenant Alston, let me
actually restore accountability and trust among the community that we once did and that people affirmed many times over.
The people killing people in Baltimore City were young people who could have benefited from investments in education during your administration.
Kwame, give somebody else a chance to talk. Lieutenant Alston, is there a point you would like to make about zero tolerance policing?
Okay, so I want to make we know zero tolerance policing does not work. We know zero tolerance policing has had devastating effects on the communities of color. But let me make one thing perfectly clear. And I see what's happening in the dynamic and the conversation here. So we have the government talking about his point. We have Kwame talking about his point. There are valid points on both sides. We have to meet each other in the middle to fix the Baltimore Police Department or to fix policing in America totally. It's these extreme views that steal the narrative on what the real work that has to be done, and that's fixing the Baltimore Police Department and having some emphasis on the social economic conditions that have led to the issues for generations in Baltimore. It's a comprehensive approach, not a one-person-take-all approach. And I think what's important is we have to sit down and we have to collaborate. People have to really have honest conversation about what is it we want, where we want to go from here, and honestly move towards that direction. There is a place of happiness in the middle that we can use to advance both sides' points. Policing has made significant advances in the last 30 years. But there is a historical impact of policing that is embedded in a socioeconomic infrastructure that is a, as a default has caused policing to be bad. So we have to address those issues and come to a common ground and move forward. Because if we have, if we continue to have this people taking all argument, we're not gonna get anything accomplished. So we have to get to a point to say we have to collaborate. And I get it on both sides. Being a scholar practitioner, I see the historical impact that Kwame is talking about. As a practitioner, I see what the governor is talking about. But we have to agree that there are significant facts and histories that are in this report that have to be addressed, and there are significant social economic issues that have to be addressed, not just in Baltimore, across the United States entirely. So,
is it your sense, Lieutenant Alston, that the consent decree process that will start now will actually include that kind of shared decision-making?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will tell you, the Department of Justice consent decree process, when it is embraced by the organization, by the community, and by all stakeholders, because these are the people who have to pay for this consent decree. There are federal funding, there are some grants that help, but in the end, it's the community, the police department, and other stakeholders who have to actually pay for this process. And we have to make sure that people follow the process, that there's accountability in the system, and that there's zero tolerance for people allowing mediocre work to be done during this process. And that's why I honestly believe if we put the structure around the current commissioner to do those type of things, up to and including firing those individuals who are resistant to change, moving individuals out of leadership positions who don't support the change, and promoting and getting other individuals in place who want to see the Baltimore Police Department thrive. And oh, by the way, so Kwame said earlier, well, we should hire the drug dealers and other people to work. I'm sure we can find some capacity for them. We cannot lower hiring standards in policing.
You've already done that.
Well, we cannot lower them because research informs us that when we do that, we have disastrous effects in regards to that. Now, is there things that we can do to make sure people are more included? What we find typically in organizations that lack diversity or lack the type of community composition we want.
We've got almost no time left, and I need to thank you both. Lieutenant Roy Alston, Patrol Watch Commander with the Dallas Police, and Kwame Rose, a Baltimore activist and journalist. I'm grateful to you both for this conversation.
Thank you.
I
also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today, Full Service Market, locations on North Charles Street and Roland Avenue. EddiesOfRolandPark.com is their website. And thank you for listening. WIPR will continue this discussion tomorrow morning on Maryland Morning. Tom Hall will speak with Police Commissioner Kevin Davis. And tomorrow on midday, we'll continue our look at this report. We'll hear from a local pastor, a law professor, and Baltimore Police Lieutenant Kenneth Butler, president of the Vanguard Justice Society, a group for minority police officers. That's tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned now for special coverage on NPR.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.